Hey, listeners. So we have a super special episode today. What we're going to do is kind of a spotlight on wine series. I'm up here in Napa talking to some really, really awesome people that I've gotten to know up here. So you're going to hear first Jeff from Fela, who's going to talk me through a tasting there at the vineyard. And then we're going to hear from his wife, Alex, who's going to talk to us about her experience in musical theater and now in wine. It's just going to be an awesome show. So just believe me, it's going to be great.
Sipping on Sondheim while belting a Bordeaux, pairing the best wines and picking the next show. Hear Broadway guests and us acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennis and Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the vine dies, whether June's or moon, I simply turn to my favorite thing, and they are.
Welcome to Tannins and Tunes. I'm Jessica, and I am without Jimmy. So you guys, this is a special episode of Tannins and Tunes. We are focusing specifically on a winery today. So we are going to be talking a little bit less about musical theater and a little bit more about wine for basically my mom. So, hi, Mom. Nice to talk to you. Here we go about your favorite winery. So today, we have Jeff. Jeff, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for our guests?
Hi, great to be here. My name is Jeff Harner, and I am the direct-to-consumer manager for Fela Winery.
Amazing. And we're here out in St. Helena, and we're talking a lot about wine today. Jeff, one thing that has been on my mind is, how did you get started in this business?
Oh, that's a very good question. I found pre and post college, I had a great capacity for drink. And I feel like most people in this industry certainly can agree with me that that's how a lot of us get our start. We just,
right.
You know, obviously the pleasant and intoxicating nature of the beverage that we push is, I think, the first ingress. And then the more you get deeper diving into it, I think the more interesting it becomes and the more sort of real the stories become behind them.
Amazing. And you have a little bit of tie to musical theater as well.
From an enjoyment perspective, certainly. I did play Flat Top in a Dick Tracy adaptation in my second grade play school years and years ago.
Sondheim in second grade.
Oh, yeah. Worst 4 years of my life. So I've always been a huge fan of musical theater, and my wife, Alex, actually, the true talent in the family, she was, amongst other things, the white cat in Cats.
Ooh.
She spent 5 years in New York dancing her heart out and working, and that's actually how she got into wine one way or another, as it turns out. And, she did it all throughout high school. She was a ballerina as well. And so a lot of my current appreciation certainly comes through her showing me things, everything from, you know, Sunday in the Park with George. Or I will, you know, force her to watch one of my silly things like Pirates of Penzance, which is still one of my absolute favorite things of all time. Right? Pirate King? Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kevin Kline, one of the most majestically athletic people out there.
Oh,
still,
yes.
I would say, to this day.
I would agree. Actually, we just saw him in Present Laughter on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
So definitely still agile.
I love that he's still doing that.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to take us through a little bit of a tasting today of the red wines here at Fela.
Happy to do so.
So let's go ahead and get started.
Perfect. So we've got four really, I think, intriguing wines that we make. They're all Pinot Noirs. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that we specialize in outside of Chardonnay and a teensy bit of Syrah. Two of them are from the 2015 vintage, one 2016 and one 2013. So not only do we have a couple of different vineyard locations, we've got some different vintages to play around with. So,
amazing. Let's get started. Yeah, I'm ready.
I love it. So if you pull that cap off, we'll start with our 2015 Lola Pinot Noir from the Sonoma Coast.
Lola, as in Kinky Boots.
She gets what she wants. I know that's probably not from Kinky Boots. Exposing my ignorance a little bit.
No, but definitely from Damn Yankees.
Oh, okay.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
Perfect. I love it. See, I knew it was something in there. If I throw enough of my random notations out, I'm sure one of them or two of them will be from musical theater. So Lola is very romantically named. Aaron Jordan, our owner and winemaker, is a great appreciateur of many things. One of them is dogs. Lola is the first of three border collie-esque animals that Aaron hangs out with. I don't want to say owns because that's not the term anymore, right? But he definitely feeds them and shelters them, and they do his bidding, so to speak. Lola was the runt of the litter. Mm-hmm. This is a wine that we haven't always made. It's actually a blend of a couple of different vineyard locations. And when we do these blends, obviously we can't label them as single vineyards, so we had to give it another name. Lola mm-hmm. arrived on scene about a month before I got here. Otherwise, I'd like to think the wine would be called Jeff, but Jeff's not quite as a mysterious or sexy name for a Pinot, I guess, as Lola is. So it's a vineyard out in the Sonoma Coast, which is very, very cool climate, which is a kind of a classic location for us. And I think it's definitely the lightest of the four that I'm going to pour for you today, which
Great.
Is why we're leaving off.
Well, and I'm definitely getting a lot of fruit forwardness on it, and especially you say Sonoma Coast, and that minerality and salinity
Absolutely.
From the coast is definitely present in it.
Certainly. Yeah, that the salinity you mentioned, that brightness, is certainly, I'd say, a throughput theme of many of our wines, mm-hmm. and particularly ones from that far coastal region. You have the opportunity to do that because the sugars are typically a little lower deeper into the season, so you can let more flavors develop into the grapes at lower sugar levels, which is great. So you can really preserve that.
Of course. Now, what made you pick here?
That's a good question. I was looking for a job, found this one. No, actually, I was running a restaurant in St. Helena called Terra, which is still
great.
My favorite place to eat of all time. They're actually celebrating their 30th year anniversary this year. Congrats, Hero and Lissa. I was everything from a host to a busboy to a waiter to the assistant general manager to the GM and wine director there. And it certainly, I think, spelled a lot of, kind of taught me a lot about hospitality.
Yeah.
But after 10 or so years working there, I realized it'd be nice to actually go out to dinner. So I was looking for a day job, and literally, I mean, I joked, but I was looking for not a way out because I loved working there, but a day job. And
something more 9 to 5.
Yeah, exactly. So jumped ship and started working here in the tasting room in 2011 and haven't looked back.
Ah, that's amazing. And going back to this wine for a second,
mm-hmm.
why do you think that your Pinot Noir is so special as compared to some other places out here?
Oh, I love this question. I get to not so silently denigrate my neighbors. It's going to be great. So basically, we're the gods among insects, and everyone... No, I'm just kidding, of course. no, I think part of it is... It's myriad, multifold, and I'll try not to be too long-winded here, but essentially our owner, Aaron, is an insanely curious person.
Mm-hmm.
People use words like talented, I would say obsessed, and his obsession is with these terrific vineyard sources.
Right.
He does a terrific job of finding vineyards that, for lack of a better description, really want to be wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a talent that he's cultivated carefully over 25 or so years. He's a very observant person. He's an instrument level certified pilot.
Wow.
Yeah, again, the only thing he can't do is actually break dance, but I think he's working on it. He's probably doing that now because he's bored with vineyards. No, but he just insanely curious. And with a grape like Pinot and grapes like Chardonnay, they're very expressive and they're very evocative of their location. So whatever soil they're on, whatever atmosphere they're in, they will kind of show their nuances as they grow and as they become wine. And I think that curiosity has led him to develop the program that we have, which, as I was saying earlier, is close to 30 different single vineyard wines now.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, so with wines like the ones we're tasting today, I think it's kind of a fun tasting in the sense because we're getting looks at different vineyards, but also different vintages. And with 2015, I think you hit the nail on the head with that fruit forward note, those kind of primary characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think, the fourth or fifth year of very intense drought in our area.
Right.
Now, on the Sonoma Coast, where we're at, it's like rainforest for 2 months and dryland desert for 10. So you have these extremes. So we didn't feel quite the intensity as other folk did. But, I mean, it still definitely concentrated those flavors. And I think in 2015, those primary characteristics are very upfront. And it's kind of deceptive because these are wines that are very serious and structured and can certainly last for a while in your cellar, but they're so good right now, it's kind of tough to lay off them.
It definitely is. I know that from experience. There are actually bottles of wine that I have in my New York apartment and that have moved multiple times that have labels on them that says, age, do not drink, Jessica, stop.
Those are good for, like, the bleary-eyed parties, right, where three or four bottles in, you're like, oh, maybe My fast self was trying to tell me something.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's great.
Definitely good.
My roommates and I had a similar system, but we used sticky notes. Green sticky note for go ahead, black for stop or I'll murder you. Red for I don't really know, whatever, but yeah, it worked out pretty
That's
well.
Definitely what I need. Let's move on to the second wine.
Perfect. So this is the 2015 Kiefer Ranch Pinot Noir from the Russian River Valley.
I tried this before, but it wasn't the 2015.
That's right. Yeah, so Kiefer is definitely a mainstay of one of our our lineup. Marcy Kiefer, unfortunately, recently passed, but she is one of these just hard-nosed farmers who lived amongst her vines, had an adorable dog named Bodie, and a really fierce gopher-killing stick. I mean, she literally did everything herself. She was a terrific person
That's
that we
amazing.
Get to represent. She was our very first Chardonnay and Pinot back in 1999. Mm-hmm. Our release year was 98. If Russian River, in fact, if California had a similar ranking system as they did in Burgundy for vineyard quality, Marcy's would be the like Grand Cru, the benchmark for the area.
Wow.
So we're very fortunate to work with the fruit. I think that the highlights of this wine, which I'd love to hear your thoughts, but it's everything you'd want out of Russian River. It's richness, it's ripeness, but it's also zippiness, it's acidity, it's refreshing characteristics as well as the kind of glorious, full throttle flavors that you can get from that area.
Well, it's so funny because you're getting red fruit definitely on the nose. Really, like you say, that zippiness right there on the nose. But then you taste it and you get that mushroom quality.
Mm-hmm.
You get even like that vanilla. And tell us a little bit about the barrels. You were telling us about this earlier.
Absolutely.
And I kind of want to hear about that just because I think that it influences definitely on this one, on the Kiefer Ranch.
Oh, yeah. It's funny that you say that. The mushroom characteristic, that kind of, forest floor, petrichor, camphor characteristic. When we write tasting notes for our wines, we don't do it all the time, but sometimes we'll include like suggested pairings. And for I think 7 or 8 mailing list releases straight in the early 2000s, it was you pair this with Coco Van or something that had mushrooms in it.
Yes.
And it was just like, that is the perfect thing. So I'm really glad that you said that. So the oak regimen for our Pinots is typically 25, maybe 30% new French oak. We use a couple of different coopers. Aaron was an art history major, and I think a result of that art history is, the more colors you have on the artist palette, so to speak, the more opportunity you have to observe the impact on wine.
Right.
And a real quick plug for our friends in Beaujolais. Aaron is obsessed with Beaujolais.
Oh, me too.
Oh, my God, right? Chug, chug, chug. It's
right.
So good.
Yeah, it goes with every single thing.
Exactly. Oh, my God. I keep trying to tell Alex that, but she's like, you can't always want to drink Beaujolais.
No. Thanksgiving dinner, that's my choice.
Oh, totally.
It goes with everything on the table.
Right. Nothing else does that.
Right.
Except maybe Pinot. The occasional Zin. But no, Beaujolais, I mean, all year long. You can
right.
drink it when it's cold. You can drink it when it's hot. I actually didn't really get into it until I started working here.
Interesting.
And I don't want to say I totally mimicked Aaron, but I did. Because I noticed he was ordering a bunch, and I was like, what is your obsession with Beaujolais? What's the deal? And he's like, well, it's the best thing of every grape I like. It's relatively affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You can drink it early. You can age it 10 years if you get the good cru stuff,
right.
good producers. But it's incredibly evocative. Like, there's no doubt about where this wine came from. It's no new wood. And I think that really resonated with me when I watched the past 5 or so years of our wine and barrel program.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about it a little bit earlier, just the less use of new oak to really let the flavor of the vineyard come through in the wine.
Yes,
I think that's
definitely.
Been something that we've moved towards the last couple of years.
Well, and what I like about your program here, too, is that just what you were saying, that you don't add anything to the wine that doesn't need to be added in the vineyard or in the barreling, in the fermentation process. And
right.
I think that's amazing. And not that it's a natural wine and not that it's, organic and sustainable farming,
right,
blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
Because these words are thrown around.
Yes.
And
bandied about, you might say.
Right.
And
exactly.
I do love a nicely bandied word, don't get me wrong. But,
right.
Yeah, no, they're very much used for marketing, I think, more than most things. And that's good. I mean, I do our marketing here alongside a very talented group of other folk. But, you want to say that and have it mean something. And I think,
exactly.
Like, Alex and I were exploring a lot of the natural, quote-unquote. You didn't see my air
right.
quotes there, but I did them. the natural wine movement. And it's a fascinating movement because there's a lot of stuff that they get right. And then there's some stuff where you're just like, well, let's push the pause button on that, and let's see if that actually turns out to be. Like, a great example are the wines of Domaine Ravenot in Burgundy. I mean, no sulfur, right? Nothing added to the vineyard whatsoever.
Yeah.
Super precise. There's a reason they're so expensive. And these, I think, you know, we emulate that. We use little bits of sulfur, but nothing on our crush pad. Not really anymore until just before bottling.
Right, so just it's to preserve it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I wouldn't call these natural per se. Not all of the vineyards we work with are organic, but at least not certified, but most of them are organically.
But at least you have a commitment towards not adding anything that doesn't need to be added.
Exactly.
Love that.
Yeah.
Here, let's move on to the third one.
Wonderful. So this next one jumps into the 2016 vintage, which is a vintage a lot of us are still, I think, figuring out in a very fun way, because figuring out with wine means drinking it.
Always. I love to figure out and research tons of wines.
I feel like, from what I've heard, so does your mom, and I hope that doesn't sound like a your mom thing, but I just, when you said hi, Mama, I was like, oh, that's right, she really likes her wine.
She does.
I want her to come out here so we can drink together, that's all.
Of course.
So this is from the Savoy Vineyard in Anderson Valley, and I think it's a great analog to my comments about Kiefer Ranch. I think it's the benchmark for that area. There are a lot of terrific vineyards up there, but it just nails the characteristics of Anderson Valley. Take it away, I think.
Okay, listeners, I am encouraging you to do what I'm doing and put four glasses of wine together and drink one after the other, not only because it's fun, but also because...
Always a good decision.
Always. But also because you can taste the difference in these wines. Like, the difference between the Kiefer Ranch from Russian River Valley and the Savoy Vineyard from Anderson Valley is insane.
Right.
And it's the same exact grape.
Yep.
But it's so, so different.
Yeah.
I mean, I am definitely getting a lot more earthiness on this, and it's because of the climate, it's because of the soil, like, things are different.
It's wild. Anderson, I mean, it's a couple of hours north of where Kiefer is located. There's a lot more going on in the air up there with that marine layer that comes in and the inversion layer,
right.
And it's crazy because you have these really hot days, but they're balanced by these really cold nights when all that marine layer comes
in. That fog is in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, in the surrounding environment, it definitely go up to Philo, go up to Boonville. It's a world apart from what we do down here. It's still the Wild West out there.
Really incredible. So what is the process? I don't think a lot of our listeners know this. What is the process of bringing grapes here? What is that like in terms of harvest season?
Oh, my gosh. That's all kinds of fun. I'm glad I don't have to do that. No, that chore lands squarely in the very capable hands and organizational mind of Savannah Wright, our assistant winemaker. She gets to coordinate all of the delivery trucks. She calls a lot of the picks along with Aaron. And what that means is the pick is essentially, of course, the day that we're harvesting the fruit after sampling it. So we
and
have
it's
this
very precise, right?
Oh, very precise. Mm-hmm. You want to, yeah. I don't want to steal Mike Collini from Stony Hill's quote, but I'm going to. he says we pick on pH, and we try to do something in a similar vein. You know, we don't necessarily have a golden rule for what sugar level we pick at. It's very game time decision, vintage by vintage.
Yeah.
I mean, if we really want to go into the deep end, we can talk about our approach to whole cluster, but maybe that's another podcast. a lot of it is Savannah's got this massive whiteboard. It's about the size of her wall. And all of the barrel room, all the tank room, all of the cellar essentially is laid out. And when she starts getting samples in and she starts realizing it's, you know, time for the, you know, we'll say S to hit the proverbial fan.
Right, yeah.
Then she starts inscribing where everything's going to go and where everything's going to be put. So it's a logistical nightmare, unless you're a person like her who just really enjoys that sort of challenge.
Of course. Well, it reminds me of, like, picking a season for a regional theater, that you have the whiteboard out and you have to know what is coming out, what your demographic is going to want to be seeing, and who the available people are that you could bring in as actors.
Oh, totally.
And it really is just picking the right show for the right time.
Absolutely. Yeah, resource management, right?
Exactly.
Organizing the right material. And, you know, to her, she doesn't have actors. She has barrels and tanks and concrete eggs.
Basically the same thing.
Yeah. You heard it here first, actors. No,
but
it's true, though. You often, I mean, she will walk the entire cellar. Aaron will walk the entire, and you hear them talking to the barrels as if they're people.
Yeah,
they'll sample them. I mean, it's so funny that you said that way. I hadn't really considered that, but I mean, they do treat them. I mean, they hug them. Let's be honest. They hug them. They say supportive, nurturing things to them all the time.
Well, they have to. Just like an actor, they need to be coddled to be ready for opening night.
Exactly. You're going to do great. You'll remember the first line. Everything will be fine.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That was always my biggest fear if I ever acted. I competed in sports throughout college, and so I have nightmares about that still. But, like, acting, I would always imagine myself just being like, oh, my God, I'm never going to remember anything. I'm going to look out and see someone. I'm going to make eye contact. I'm going to freeze. And I'm sure that's probably got to be a common thing that
oh,
actors.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Well, and I, for me, it's mostly dance moves that I'm going to be doing the wrong moves at the wrong time. And
I tourgetaed when I should have plied.
Exactly.
Are those words?
Those are words.
Woohoo. Alex, are you listening, babe? I did one.
She's going to be so proud.
I hope so.
I definitely will still have dreams about choreography and be doing choreography or even creating choreography in my brain while I dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very sad. I wake up and I'm like, oh, that was what I dreamt about.
Right. No, that's actually, gosh, the more we go into this, the more I think there are some serious parallels between that and how wine. I mean, it's literally a ballet of barrels and tanks that happens when you see the team that we have full-time staff that works in our cellar, but also some interns that come in. But just the way they move forklifts around with tons of grapes and you know, what that all means in terms of organization and, you know, it is fascinating.
And you
to
have
watch.
To be aware of what everyone is doing at every time and not only be aware of your job, because that should be priority number one to you, but also what everyone else is doing in order to not get in their way or be in their way at the right time.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. The strategic in your wayness of it all.
Oh, yes. Let's try this last one. I'm very excited.
So this is a 2013 vintage now from our estate vineyard. And this is one of only a couple of vineyards that we own. Everything else that we tried today is from fruit that we purchase.
Great.
The estate property is out in the middle of nowhere. Well, it's not the middle of nowhere, but you can see the middle of nowhere from there. It's 1,400 foot elevation. It's about 5 miles off the Pacific coast. It's essentially on a mountaintop of just really talcum powder textured, pulverized, what they call Gold Ridge soil. It's like beach sand on top of a mountain. It's crazy.
You say that, and it makes total sense while drinking this wine.
And it's funny, because Aaron planted this vineyard. He bought it in 95, but he didn't plant it until 98, 99, and I think again in 2002. To check my website resource on that to be sure. But people weren't really planting out there at the time. And a lot of folk I know called him crazy for putting Pinot out there, for putting Syrah out there for certain. And you know, I don't want to say he's one of these like, well, I'll show you guys. He's just, he's like, no, this looks like Burgundy and Cornas where I just was. And I'm assuming things are going to go pretty well here. And, you know, 20 years later, I think
the
proof is in the Pinot, so to speak.
It's so light.
Yeah.
It is probably, I mean, it's funny because it's heavy in body, but light in look and light in smell. I mean.
Yeah, 13. And you talk about when you're talking about those nightmares about choreography and this and that. That's how winemakers feel about vintages.
Oh, yes.
They're like, oh, that was the one that killed me. 13 was a really beautiful vintage. It was a big crop. Let me take that back. It wasn't a really big crop. It was a normal crop, but it was after a series of very small crops. 2012 was pretty big, too, but 13 was similar to 12 in that sense. But a lot more structure, a lot more kind of high-toned aromatics, and I think the lightness of the color and the lightness of the wine on the nose certainly speaks to that. But yeah, I mean, it's not
hearty.
Windy. You can
It's definitely hearty. But you look at it and you smell it and you think, oh, this is kind of wimpy, like in the sense that that's what you think it's going to taste like,
right.
It is not at all. This is a powerhouse wine.
Yeah, that's why it's bat and cleanup.
Yeah, right? It's really incredible. I mean, this could be paired with any kinds of food, but if I was to pick, like, something that my mom would make at home, it would be, like, pork chops and mashed potatoes.
Oh, totally.
And some green beans, and then have this on the side. Oh.
I feel like there's a dinner invite coming soon. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that
so.
Right, Jessica's mom? I'll fly out there.
Right, exactly.
Don't have a good time. I bring wine, you bring the pork chops, and all the other accoutrements you just mentioned. I'm there.
Beautiful. We're done. So tell us a little bit about what I don't want to say the future of the winery, because it's already doing, like, amazing and beautiful things, but just where are you going?
So it's great timing to ask that question. Excuse me. I just returned from a trip up to Oregon's Willamette Valley, and we just...
Okay, so that's how you say it. Willamette.
Yes. Not someone told me Willamette Dammit is how you remember it.
Okay.
I hope it's okay if I curse on your
podcast. So, always. But listeners, you heard it here. Willamette. That's how you say it.
Well, I was going to say East Coasters, especially just the word Oregon is contentious, right? Because it's not
true.
Oregon, it's Oregon.
Right.
The Oregon Trail. All right. You know, that's what they say. That's how
okay.
I say
Willamette.
So, yeah. Willamette Dammit. So we're taking over... a tasting room that's already been established. The current tenant is leaving. We're moving in the Eola Amity Hills Appalachian, and it's great. I mean, it's a terrific neighborhood. Seven Springs is right around the corner. Lingua Franca is right around the corner. Walter Scott's, Bryn Mawr. They're just Bethel Heights. I mean, just the neighborhood of talent is,
right.
You know, I would say intimidating, but I think it's the exact kind of folk that we have similar winemaking and similar approaches to farming. So it's a great neighborhood to be in. So that's the immediate future. We're opening that in May 1st. Thank you for letting me plug our new Eola tasting room. But yeah, I think Oregon is very much the new frontier. I think with Fela down here south, Fela South, we're jokingly referring to it. We are at a pretty comfortable production level. I think, you know, we're making 35, 36 different wines, like I was saying. You know, we don't have any intent to really grow per se, but, you know, I think just looking at things right now, I joked earlier, our cave, it's about 15,000 square feet. We probably have a couple thousand more feet we could find underground, you know, have an egg room dedicated just to this concrete beast that you saw.
So that's something, listeners, that I definitely want to touch on. Tell us a little bit about the concrete egg.
Oh, yes.
My favorite thing.
Same. Only because they allow me to reference so many of my favorite movies like Cocoon and Alien, and they're essentially these concrete vessels, small ones about, you know, I don't know, 5.5-6 feet tall, holds 3 or so barrels worth of liquid volume, and they're vessels that we use to ferment and age our Chardonnay. And so I think one of the hallmarks of Aaron's approach to Chardonnay, again, like it is with all of our other wines, is don't put in something that you don't want to be there, and concrete being a neutral flavor environment. It doesn't add any flavor. It just helps maintain and preserve what's already there in the grape. So wines that are fermented in concrete, they taste very, very, very close to the grape source that they came from, which is a really probably silly and unintellectual way of saying it. But that's ultimately what we're going for as far as winemaking goes.
That's how it should be.
Not mess with the raw materials.
Right.
They're great. Great thermal inertia. They don't get too hot, so you can have these really nice, long, cool, drawn-out fermentations. That helps, I think, keep the wines from cooking and making them overly tropical. So you have those. You mentioned the salinity. I mean, you definitely have those saline notes in our Chardonnays.
Definitely.
Preserves, you know, what a lot of folk refer to as that minerality or that mineral aspect
of
the wine.
It's just that. People have asked me all the time. They're like, I don't like a buttery, oaky Chardonnay.
Right.
Your Chardonnays don't taste like that at all.
Mm-hmm. So another fun fact about a nice cool cellar and concrete vessels and the mostly hands-off approach that we have is, and I don't want to get too much into the excuse me, chemistry of it, but the way our fermentations run, they're really good at bypassing the production of that buttery aromatic.
Right.
And Savannah would be much more adept at describing why that exists, but
right.
You know, essentially our hands-off approach allows us to not have that happen. So believe it or not, our wines are full mallow, but again, we're picking when there's a really nice balance of tartaric, malic, and other acids in the grapes, and as a result, there isn't as much, I mean, the short answer is there isn't as much malic that becomes lactic acid.
Right.
So by doing that, I think we really, I don't want to say dodge a bullet, but, you know, we... are able to make wines that are definitively Chardonnay that aren't fermentation flavor Chardonnay.
Right.
And I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm glad to hear that you have a lot of listeners that are into the non, you know, buttery, oaky
style
of Chard. That's super cool. You guys should come hang out here. I'll pour you all of our Chards.
Yes.
It is fascinating. I mean, you've really seen the pendulum swing back and forth on that in the past couple of years.
Well, and speaking of that, if our listeners are out in the area, where can they find you?
So we are, well, you mean here at the winery or so we're by appointment. Shoot me an email, Jeff, G-E-O-F-F at FelaWines.com. Love to show you around. Let me know you heard about us on Tannins and Tunes. and again, Chardonnay heavy tasting. It'll be great.
And then where can people find you through social media?
We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, at Faila Wines, F-A-I-L-L-A-W-I-N-E-S. Gosh, I hope I spelled that right. I said it so fast.
you said it with a lot of confidence, though, <that's>, so it's okay.
Fake it till you make it, right? It sounded good. So we're all over the social medias. We usually try to post things that are interesting to us that we think, you know, for a particular farmer or a particular vineyard or our tasting room staff or cellar staff are doing something cool.
Amazing. Well, and listeners, if you come out here, I can't tell you how gorgeous it is because you just have to experience it for yourself. And you get to go in the caves and they set up a personalized tasting just for you. It's really, really incredible. Right now we're sitting outside on a beautiful day. It's slightly cool, but it's not snowing. So my New York listeners can be jealous. And it's also, I assume in summer, it's just beautiful.
Absolutely.
It's cooler out here than near the ocean.
Yes. Yeah, we do have capacity for a lot of outdoor tastings because of all the tree cover here. So even
right.
if it's 80, 90, 95 outside, it's, you know, very pleasant in the shade, which is great.
That's lovely.
Great office to show up to.
Beautiful. Well, and you can follow us at Tannins and Tunes on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And then email us any questions that you might have at tannsandtunes@gmail.com. And then don't forget, so this is something, actually, I want to ask you about this.
Of course.
So how was Faila, how did the fires impact Faila?
So we were very fortunate in St. Helena. This little neck of the woods, for whatever reason, outside of really just terrible air quality, mm-hmm. was largely unaffected by actual damage and personnel damage. We all know and have family in Sonoma County, and we have
right.
some coworkers who live over there. But fortunately, no personnel
good.
Loss. Just obviously, there was some damage to homes and. We all know somebody who's over there.
Right.
So it was pretty traumatic, obviously, just from a business standpoint, which is the last thing you think about when that's going on. But I think it did turn a lot of folk away.
Right.
When you turn on the news and you see Western Hemisphere of, rather Western, it's on fire. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of support. We put a Rebuild Wine Country link on our homepage of our website,
mm-hmm.
and they've been incredibly active, you know, raising money and raising awareness and doing events. And I think it's in Napa, at least, it's bounced back very quickly. In Sonoma, just looking over there, it's amazing how much rebuilding has already gone on
right.
and how quickly. It's going to be a long time, of course, but there are a lot of serious efforts with really talented people behind them being the driving forces. So
that's incredible. Mm-hmm. Well, something that we're trying to do here on Tans and Tunes is to give back to people that are going through those times right now. And so, listeners, if you are looking to rate and review, we will donate $1 towards efforts here in Sonoma and Napa towards rebuilding these wineries for every review that you leave on iTunes or Stitcher or any of those things. So make sure that you go on and you review because that's really important to us right now. and we'll also, in addition to that, we will pair a wine with your username.
Ooh,
so
that's
make
fun.
Sure that it's a really fun username
yeah.
so that I have a little bit of a challenge. Well, Jeff, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Joining us today. It's
Absolutely.
Been a blast, and these wines are incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. I say as if I had anything to do with them being made.
Well, you talked about them very well.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, listeners. We'll talk to you soon.
The night they invented champagne, it's plain as it can be. They thought of you and me.
The night they invented champagne.
Welcome to Tannins and Tunes. I'm Jessica. Hey, listeners. So like I said at the beginning of the episode, we are here with Alex Harner, who is amazing. She is so cool. And guess what? She comes from both musical theater and wine. So we're going to have a great conversation with her about both of those things. Taste some wine, let you know what it is, and have a good time. Hey, Alex, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We've had some amazing wines already today. It's been a really fun time. So tell us a little bit about your experience in musical theater and how you got started in all.
Yeah, so mostly dance was my kind of main thing growing up. I took a lot of ballet.
That was my main thing. 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3.
So that was my main passion and how I kind of got started in, I guess, performing.
Right.
So I did a lot of ballet, and I kind of realized very quickly that well, first of all, I started way too late to be a prima ballerina. I realized, I was like, oh, I'm getting really good at this, and this is amazing, except for, you know, everyone around me is already on point and, like, you know, 7 years old. And
right.
So I was, like, a little late in the game to that, and I realized that if I wanted to really be a performer, my options were very limited in ballet. That was it. You know, everyone I knew was like quitting high school, and that was, you know, it's like you have to dedicate your entire life
to
ballet.
Of
and
course.
I liked other things. I liked acting. I liked singing. I liked it all. So, and ballet was my first passion, but, I kind of quickly realized I needed to kind of expand my horizons a little bit in the theater world. So I started, with a company, very quickly after kind of my main focus in ballet, with a local company in San Jose called CMT, which is Children's Musical Theater of San Jose.
Yes.
Very kind of big. And honestly, like, now being as an adult, realizing, yeah, it's just like children's theater, no big thing. Their productions are insane. They're amazing. They're incredibly well produced. It's like Broadway for kids, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's incredible. So I was very lucky in that was kind of my upbringing in theater.
Cool.
So I did mostly theater there ever since I was maybe like, I don't know, maybe how old was I? Anyways, that was a little.
Right.
And then did kind of regional theater in California. And then as I kind of graduated, I continued with ballet mostly as my training, and dance was always my kind of focus.
Right.
And then did some Open University at a college in San Jose.
Great.
And then moved to New York. My original goal was actually, I was like, oh, well, you know, I have a lot of family in LA, so I'll move to LA, I'll do that whole thing, and maybe I'll get into movie, who knows?
Whatever. Right.
All I knew is I really loved to dance, and I loved performing. And I was getting paid, I was getting paid to perform, and it was amazing. So I thought, well, I'll do some training in New York. So I moved to New York just for a summer originally.
Right.
To go to Tisch, NYU. And I worked for Steps on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I did that for a summer, and I just loved it so much in New York. My whole goal was like, oh, I don't want to be the person that like moves to New York and then fails and then leaves. I also never really wanted to move to New York, but once I got there, I was like, oh yeah. I mean, I have to say, here, it's amazing.
Right.
It's amazing. It's got everything.
Yeah,
and it's so much. So I just loved it, and I stayed. And
it's so great.
Yeah. So that was, anyways. Long story short.
Well, and then what prompted you? So you were in New York, and you were dancing, and you were training and going to auditions, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What made you really switch over to wine?
Well, money.
Yeah.
Randomly.
Because we all worked 5 jobs.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I had always really loved wine. I had growing up in Northern California, I'm from Santa Cruz originally, but wine was always kind of a thing that was, at least in my parents' life, they really loved it. They weren't necessarily big connoisseurs or anything, but they definitely appreciated it, and
right.
go make Napa trips, you know.
That's great.
As people do, yeah.
Yes.
And so it was always something, actually, when I was young, like, I would always kind of get little tastes of it at the dinner table.
Yes.
And, you know, so there was kind of a little of romance for me, with wine already. So I had always kind of had that appreciation, and that was kind of, you know, as performers do, you end up working in the food and beverage industry in some
right.
capacity. So to make ends meet, I was working in restaurants.
Uh-huh.
My first job in New York was actually at a sports bra. sports a bar. Sorry, it's been a little champagne today.
Yes, so much champagne. Our listeners know is my favorite. And so
yeah, I drink quite a bit of it myself. Anyways, yeah, so definitely not wine-oriented,
okay.
But service-oriented.
Right.
I very quickly was like, this is bullshit. I want to work in, you know, something that I respect. I want to work in an area that I, you know,
right.
excited about. So,
yeah, of course.
I started working in a French restaurant in Midtown.
Okay.
Albeit not a fancy one. It was kind of a kitschy, it's kind of shitty.
Right,
but it was French.
Okay.
And I totally faked my way into being like the wine pro there, even though I knew absolutely nothing about wine. I just loved it so much.
That's great.
And I just kind of faked my way through it. Such an actor. And
right.
And I was, you know, kind of loved that feeling. And and I did love wine. I really truly did.
Right.
So that was kind of my first, like, all right, maybe I should look into this a little more.
Okay.
So I decided to get certified with the WSET.
Woo-hoo!
And as I was doing that, I started one of my, like, real blessings. I feel like this is really, like, the reason I think I actually have a career in wine is I started working for Tinto Fino, which was a Spanish wine shop in the East Village.
Cool.
Karen Oth was the owner at that time, and tiny little shop, like shoebox spot, but it was all Spanish wine. This amazing woman who was pretty young and just like a fiery passion for Spanish wine.
She's
from Long Island and just saucy and just loved the crap out of what she was doing. And it just was so infectious.
Yes.
And also just being able to really hone in on one region was really helpful. At least kind of getting into wine, you know, the wine world's so big.
Yes. And oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, so really kind of solidifying that passion for me was being able to focus on one region.
Yeah.
Because it really expanded my mind. Because, I mean, Spain is, you know, enormous in its wine, I guess, regions and culture. There's so many different varieties and styles being produced.
But when you're not having to focus on, like, Spain and France and Italy and South Africa, like, it's a little bit easier in order to be well-versed in everything that's going on in Spain.
Right, exactly. And it really just opened my eyes to how diverse one, you know, country can be.
Right.
So it was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. There's a lot to learn, and it just really kind of, I guess, got me really, really excited about wine in general and the world of wine to explore. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
So you're working in wine in New York, and then one day you're like, want to move out to California because it's real cold.
literally 100%. That's what I tell people. Yes. So why'd you move back? I was like, because I was freezing.
Yes.
So 100%. Yeah. So I basically, after Tinto Fino, I worked as a traditional sommelier in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Which is real hard, people. I don't know how people
do
it.
And it's so funny also when I see people get freaked out by the sommelier at a restaurant. They don't know what to do. They're like, should I taste it? Like, oh, you're pouring this for me. Should I? Okay. It tastes great. Yes. I guess. I don't really know.
No. Yeah. I mean, and wine's so subjective. Like,
honestly,
at 100. I mean, as much as the elitism of the wine world will have you think otherwise, it really just depends on what you think. I mean, as a consumer. So.
That consumers should not be afraid to say, hey, I don't like this.
Right.
Like, if it's not your speed.
No. Well, and that's the sommelier's job, honestly, is not to be, you know, the boss of anyone. The sommelier's job is to find out what it is you like and how can I help you with this.
Exactly.
Yeah. How can I help you find what's going to make you you know, the most happy
retiring
experience.
So, exactly.
Yeah. It's hospitality, people. 101. Yeah.
Yep. So you moved back here and.
Yeah. So I moved back to California because that was cold. And my family's out here too.
Right.
So, you know, it was that.
Yeah.
I actually moved out originally to work Harvest just to get my, you know, hands dirty and try that whole experience. I wasn't going to make wine or anything, but I thought, you know, it'd be good, you know, in the wine world to get some perspective in mm-hmm. terms of how things are made. And
that's actually pretty common from what I'm hearing out mm-hmm. here in Napa is that that's how a lot of people got started.
Yeah.
It's just coming to work harvest and then they either fell in love with the industry or with the people that they were working with and they said, you know, I can't leave now.
Right. Right. No, no, 100%. Actually, I was not actually going to move back. My original plan was to come out here and work a harvest and then move back to New York.
Right.
But as luck would have it, or as fate would have it. Anyway. Yeah, no, I fell in love, you know, back in love with California and yeah. And the wine industry out here, you know, it's a small community and, people are doing some great things. And I came to work for Fela Winery, as right. you know. and I met a wonderful man. And,
yeah, so and the rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history. Exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and taste this wine that yeah. we have in front of us. So talk to me a little bit about this.
Yeah, so this is a Canary Island wine. So Spain, technically.
Oh, yes.
Yes, of course. And I just am in love with all of the wines from the Canary Islands because they have such amazing minerality. They're all super light and bright and just I'm super into them. And this specific producer, Envinate, they've been doing some really amazing things. Pretty much all quote unquote natural wines. So
great.
Yeah, so no intervention, I guess, is mm-hmm. a better way to put it. They don't kind of mess with nature right. in any way. And all, you know, the Canary Islands are all volcanic.
Yes.
So,
yep.
So that's where that minerality comes from.
Of course.
And this actually, Vidueno, I think is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Excuse me if that's not.
Oh, you know, someone out there will know that my pronunciation is not the best.
well, anyways, this is, yeah, so this is actually a project that Envinate, the producer Envinate from the Canary Islands. They also do actually some stuff from northern Spain, from green Spain, but they teamed up with another vineyard to make uh-huh. this wine.
Great.
It comes from a tiny mountain parcel, and it's actually a blend of, I think it's, let me just
yeah,
double
of course,
check here.
Double
I
check.
Think it's Liston Blanco and Liston Prieto. So Liston Prieto is an indigenous variety of the Canary Islands, but it's
right.
it's actually the Mission grape.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people think of, like, you know, if they know anything about wine history in California, that's
right.
That's the Mission grape. It's
yep.
like, oh, it's just, like, this crappy grape. That like, but, like, when planted right and made right. And,
right,
you know,
exactly.
It's amazing. So, and these are all co-fermented.
Okay.
So, white and red grapes together in a very natural fashion. And I just think it's super refreshing and, like,
well, it comes out
very smoky. And
so light. I'm looking at this wine. And for anybody out there who says, oh, I really like a super light grape. I like something that is a... Like, I'm a white wine drinker, but I sometimes will do red. I think this would be the perfect body and just in terms of looking at it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's for me, this is like my ideal summer
yes,
red wine.
Definitely a summer mm-hmm. red. And it, just in smelling it, too, you're right. That smoky salinity in there. Mm-hmm. Also, that volcanic ash, you smell it
it. And one thing about Canary Island wines that I always... have said is like super like it kind of smells like weed
a little bit <It's> like,
very herbal. We'll say herbal, we'll go with that.
Vegetative. But then you taste it and it's pretty fruit forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but not as much as I think, like, I mean, you guys, I have tasted 53 wines in 2 days.
Wow. How are you still standing?
I don't know.
Actually, you know what, though? That's like my Friday night.
Right. There was we went over to Eric Kent Winery yesterday for their spring release party, mm-hmm. and they had 15 wines that they were pouring. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this.
But I will.
Oh, darn. What a life I lead.
Such as Napa life.
Exactly. But the great thing about this is that it's not as fruit forward as a Pinot, and it still has it has a really, really long finish on it.
Right.
You get the definitely mid-palate is in here. But that strawberry and that, like, ripe cherry
mm-hmm.
is definitely on the front end as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I really appreciate kind of lighter-bodied red wines that aren't just, like, all you know, all fruit. They mm-hmm. don't just taste like rosé. They taste like red wine, but they're, you know, light like
exactly.
rosé would be.
Exactly. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. exactly what this is. So if you're looking for a great summer red, tell us where people can find this.
Oh, shoot. You know, I don't know in New York. I would think maybe, here in California, if any listeners
yeah, exactly.
are in California,
yeah.
you can find it at the Spanish Table.
Perfect. That's great.
Yeah. Maybe Crush. I think yeah. I would hope maybe Crush Wine and Spirits would have something like this.
Great. Well, and we'll tag it also in our episode
notes so that
they can yeah. follow it at least. Awesome. Okay. So something that we do on our show that is a little bit fun is we play games.
Oh, no.
So what we've been doing with some of these recent episodes is instead of doing musical theater trivia, because
thank God
no one's ready
I'm
for
out of
that,
touch.
We do a lightning round with you. So, listeners, now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now. It's not as good with that, Jimmy.
Oh, no. Sorry.
But that's okay.
I knew what I would do with you.
That's okay. So, ready? Lightning round?
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
Favorite audition song to sing?
Suitcase in Another Hall.
Ooh, I love that one. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That's so good. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
It's Monday night. What are you watching on TV?
Probably Seinfeld.
Yes. Yes, I totally get that. If you weren't in wine, what would you be doing?
I'd be a drag race. I'd be on RuPaul's Drag Race. I'd be a drag queen on RuPaul's Drag Race. That would be my ideal situation.
Yes. What was a moment that you feel like you made it in wine, that you like knew what you were talking about?
Oh, man. I think when I was one of my first days on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of my first days on the floor and I was explaining sherry to a customer, which is one of the most complicated, complicated wines out there. And
yes.
I knew exactly what I was talking about and I was so excited to share it with them.
Oh
and,
my gosh.
And they were so excited to hear about it. And that was a moment. That was a moment.
I love
me.
That. Mm-hmm. What is the first album that you bought?
Oh shit. That I bought. Oh God, this is going to date me. Well, I feel like the first album that I got might've been Fugees. The
okay.
Score.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I bought it though.
Okay.
I think someone probably got it for me, which also they probably shouldn't have. Cause I was very young, but I love that record.
Oh yeah. That's yeah. a good one. That's definitely a good one. What's some of the best advice that you received for wine or for theater or whichever?
Oh, damn, that's a hard question. The best advice, is that you're not, I think probably the best advice that I got, it relates more to wine, but I think just people in general, which is that, you know, don't be a fucking snob.
Yeah.
Like, just,
oh my God.
No matter how much you learn, it never makes you better than anyone else.
Right.
And in hospitality, especially, it's just not about that.
Right.
So, you know, it's much more about treating people with respect and warmth and I wish I had a more succinct answer to that because I know I've gotten a lot of really great advice. Sure.
I say the summer. Same thing with theater is that we shouldn't I wrote an entire article about this about mm-hmm. show shaming.
Oh yeah.
And like one of my favorite musicals is 1776 and everyone hates it. Because it's long, and I love it because I don't know why. It just is. And my other favorite show is Bye Bye Birdie, and everyone is like, "Oh, that's cute." But do we need to show shame people? Like, just because you like something doesn't mean that it's bad, and doesn't mean that Wicked is lesser than you know Evita.
Right.
It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that, you know, that's what you like. And it's the same thing with wine.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, 100%.
And that's something I think that being out here has shown me as well, is that we went to a tasting room yesterday that the wine wasn't my favorite. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my brain, I'm saying like, oh, well, like, you know, who are these people that actually like this wine?
Well, it's so easy. It's so easy when you become like professional would become when you become someone who knows something about something, then all of a sudden it's so easy to group yourself and to say, well, this is obviously trash.
And it's not.
Yeah.
And because people obviously still like it. And because we had such a great experience.
Right.
And then it really comes out of that,
right.
I feel like. So I definitely agree with that advice.
Sorry, did I slow down the...
No, not at all. Okay, what is your favorite perk of your job? And what is your greatest pitfall of the job?
Perk of the job. I would say all the wine.
Yes.
Let's see. Pitfall of the job. I have to go to the gym a lot more than I would like.
Yes. I completely understand that. Welcome to my life. Okay. This is going to be a really hard question.
Oh, God.
And I apologize.
I'm scared.
Describe your best wine drinking experience.
Oh, no. That's impossible.
I know. Okay. So choose one.
Okay, I would say, and I've said this a lot, but I always think that the best way to drink wine is in the place of its origin.
Yes.
So it just enhances the entire everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you get it, the culture, because ultimately wine is about where it comes from, the people that make it, right. Et cetera, et cetera. So for me, most recently, I would say, I had one of my favorite wines, which mm-hmm. is a Spanish wine,
of course.
Actually, it's Basque. So some people.
Okay.
It's Basque, 100% Basque. It's Chocolat.
Okay.
Have you had Chocolat before?
No.
Oh God, girl. If it were summer, we'd be drinking it right now for sure. Slightly fizzy.
Okay.
Very light alcohol. Very right. Citrusy white wine from the Basque region in
right,
Spain.
Right.
And it's such a wine that you want on like the hottest day imaginable because it's like soda. It's so good.
Right.
You literally can chug it because it's like 10% alcohol or less.
Right. Right. Right.
And it's meant to be served with, you know, raw fish. And
yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, like fish tacos down in San Diego.
100%. Yeah. So, for me, the last time I had, not the last time, but I think the best time exactly was I was in Basque Country. I finally went there, and uh-huh. I had some tuna with Chocolat at one of my favorite producers there, right on this deck out, you know, looking over the ocean, and it was 80 degrees, gosh. And it was perfection. It's just exactly the way you want to drink that wine and the way life should be just ever all the time.
Yep. Yep. That sounds amazing. Yeah. So next summer, that's what I'm doing. Perfect. You can find me there. okay. What is, I know that you said that you haven't been to New York in a little bit, but what is a show that either you're still obsessing about or is your favorite show right now?
Well, I don't want to be a basic bitch, but I'm going to go ahead and say Hamilton.
Right. No show shaming.
Only. Right. Exactly. Thank you. All right. Everyone calm down. We get it. Everyone's obsessed. No, but I actually, it'd been a while since I'd really been paying attention to the musical theater world.
Right.
But when the show came out, it really impacted me. And it's like, right. This is what's great about musical
yes.
theater. It's impactful in more ways than one. You know,
yeah.
It's not just musical theater that are, you know, people that are going to appreciate this. This is like why I like musical theater.
Right.
For me, I feel like a lot of the musicals that I would be cast in aren't musicals that I, and maybe part of the reason why I'm not necessarily in musical theater anymore is because a lot of the musicals that I'd be cast in aren't necessarily the musicals that I would want to listen to over and over again or go see.
I understand that.
Like Rodgers and Hammerstein, like I can't with
yeah.
it, you know, I just can't. And that's like what, or like Cats even. I love Cats. That was
right.
the favorite show I was ever in.
Right.
Was Cats. I loved performing in it, but I don't want to go see Cats.
Right.
You know? Like, I just don't. So it's like, that's kind of the problem. Whereas Hamilton, I think it's exciting. It's got all the things about musical theater that makes me want to go see.
That's great.
Theater. Yeah.
Well, I think that it did that for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool.
Right.
So if you were to pair a wine with Hamilton.
Oh my goodness.
Just reaching
Girl.
Back in the Rolodex.
Oh, man. Just like one wine or like a style?
Let's do a style.
Okay.
Let's do a style.
Okay, I'm trying not to pick Spanish because that's all I'm
that's
talking
okay.
about.
Okay. You can go Spanish. That's
no,
okay.
No. All right. Okay. I would pick a white wine from the Jura region.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they're funky AF.
Yep.
But they're also old school. You
yep.
know what I mean?
We actually did a Jura for Shrek.
Ah, I could see that. Oh, I could actually see that.
Right?
Oh, that's like a better. God damn it. That's a better pairing.
No. But it totally works. Like what you were saying. Like it's old school. It has some like funky notes in there, mm-hmm, which is mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. the show is. But
right.
it's also still super classic.
Right.
Right. Which, when you really look at Hamilton, it really does come down to...
It'll teach you some shit.
It'll teach you some shit. And it's a classic approach to a musical, just with a different style thrown into it.
Right.
So maybe something like a new producer within Jura who's, like, doing something a little bit different, but also using classic approach.
Hashtag Ganabaugh.
Right. There you go. Perfect. Done. Check.
Done.
Hamilton's done. I think that's it. Awesome. Though I definitely want to go back to Another Suitcase, Another Hall, because I'm obsessed.
I'm obsessed. It's great. Yeah. I love it. We should maybe, like, sing an outro to that.
Right? Oh, yeah, definitely.
For sure.
But first, tell us where our listeners can find you on social media.
Oh, at Alex L. Harner. That's my little handle there.
On Instagram and Twitter?
I don't really... Twitter's so difficult.
Yeah. I know. Our listeners know. My tweets are bad. It's just bad.
I don't even... Does it still exist?
Right.
No, mostly just Instagram.
Instagram.
And then my blog, of course, yes. Which is winethumb.com, as in wine and then a thumb.com.
Listeners... It's really amazing.
It's cute when I can get to it.
Comes up with some really great wine pairings that I know that all of you would love. So definitely check it out, winethumb.com. And then you can follow Fela, of course, on all the social media that we talked about with Jeff. And, of course, his social media. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you.
This was so fun.
This was great. Okay, so here we go. Where do you want to start?
Oh, God. I don't even know.
I don't... That love affair would last for long. Never fooled myself that my dreams would come true. Being used to trouble, I anticipated, but all the same I hated. Wouldn't you? So it happens now.
Another
Am I going to?